Then, yeah, we can start it whenever.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Welcome to Pal Money Podcast. Let's go.
Pal Money, let's go.
Yeah. Let's fucking go.
Yeah, we have Carr Gonzalez here. Carr is a, Bitcoin organizer, media guy, producer, you know, extraordinaire, I'd say. Is that fair?
Yeah, I try to help out other Bitcoiners as much as I can.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Somebody was saying about how, like, he was like, yeah, people like Carr, like, are, like, super selfless and, like,
really 100%, yeah.
And actually, Carr is really helping us out at the moment. We're at BitBlock Boom.
Live from BitBlock Boom.
Wow, yeah. You guys are from here. Yeah, it's awesome.
We wanted to come and interview people for the pod, and Carr very kindly at the 11th hour was like, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah,
thanks for having me on. I listened to I listened to a little bit of it the last time when you came on my pod, Thriller Bitcoin.
And yep.
It's just a great name.
I listened to a little bit of your podcast in case you went on.
Cool. Yeah, he brought you up.
Exchange. Yeah, but we're recording at Pleb Lab.
Yeah, this is Pleb Lab. Yeah, yes. This is green. I don't know. Maybe we can do.
Yeah, you totally could do something here. We just moved in here 2 weeks ago, and we had an open house yesterday.
Oh wait! You just said there. This is a new Pleb Lab.
Yes,
there was an old
Pleb Lab? There was an old Pleb Lab that we used to have at a Capital Factory because Kyle orange pilled the vice president there.
Uh-huh.
And he just gave us a free space
because
he thought we were crazy Bitcoiners.
Uh-huh.
And then that's
he
how
was
we,
right.
He was yeah. right. And that's yeah. how we started the first Pleb Lab.
And when was that?
That was last year, in October, September.
Uh-huh.
Like and less than a year ago?
Yeah.
Wow, okay, cool.
And then after that point, we brought in people. We brought in Carmen. We brought in Tony. We brought in Keon. We brought in John.
Uh-huh.
We brought in
Michael
Atwood. We brought in all these people, all these all-stars, because no one was doing what we were doing. We were already working out of there, kind of working together, me, Keon, and Kyle. And they were just like, cool, we have this office space. We invited all our friends. And then some of them were building up projects, so we just started helping them.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, we did the Bitcoin block party with Oshi, and that's when people started knowing who we were.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that point, people started coming up to us and said, are you guys going to raise, should we?
Uh-huh.
They're like, well, obviously you are doing something. Mm-hmm. You should probably put a pitch deck together. So me and Kyle started putting a pitch deck together, had Keon looking at it. And then before you know it, people wanted to give us money to do what we did at Capital Factory, but bigger. And then that's what we did. We did all this. I mean, there was a lot of work in between that, but we were doing hackathons.
Uh-huh.
We did the SAS by Southwest hackathon. We did Bitcoin++ with Nifty Nay and Stackamoto.
Uh-huh.
And we were really successful at it. And then we moved in here.
So I wanted to ask, can you explain what Pleb Lab is?
Place for developers. It's a place like somebody like you, Casey, if you needed to work out of, or if you wanted to come into Pleb Lab and start working out at Pleb Lab, it's open for you. It's kind of like a misfit hacker house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when we first were doing this, me and Keon used to always talk about Hall and Catch Fire. And I don't know if you've ever seen that show.
The movie or
the
show?
The show. Well, no one knows this show. It's amazing. It's such an instrumental show. But it's about these group of people who were around in the 80s. And they went through this whole computer revolution. And then the internet towards the end of the series.
Yep.
And me and Keon were always on the same wavelength about a lot of things. I had a music and art background. Keon is very computer focused, but he understood that kind of misfit thing.
Uh-huh.
And so when me and Keon would get together just here at Capital Factory and stuff, we would always talk about the show.
Uh-huh.
And eventually we were just like, cool, let's just make a hacker house like Haunt Catch Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Like we'll just start a mutiny, basically. That's what they named their hacker house.
Uh-huh.
So we just thought it was cool. And then Kyle was already hanging out with us. He was like, are you guys talking about a Germinator or something? Because Kyle's from San Francisco, he had this whole business thing. And we were like, no.
Is the Germinator a pre-incubator?
I guess. I don't know, dude. That's the thing. I don't know. I just know that I want to hang out with my friends and I want to build cool stuff. And I think I could help them. And so that's what we did. We built that inside of Capital Factory.
Yeah.
And then the rest is history.
Uh-huh.
But it's a place for developers, people like Super Testnet, who are a little adversarial to the everyday kind of things that
mm-hmm.
you would see in Bitcoin. We gather all those people and now we have plebs that are turning into devs.
Uh-huh.
So
that's
you start
cool.
seeing that
cool.
and they just want to hang out with us and they want to we want to share ideas and move Bitcoin in the right direction. And it was kind of cool to see yesterday because I don't know if you noticed, but NYDIG announced that they're going to do an accelerator in New York.
Right. Yeah.
And that was so cool because, like, for the longest time, we had been, like, harping on the door, like, man, Bitcoin developers need more help, need more help.
There's so much money in crypto, and there's so little money in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, people, you know, like, a lot of altcoins, they have these huge foundations that give millions upon millions of dollars in ecosystem grants. You can start companies in altcoins just by getting grants from the altcoin ecosystem fund.
Mm-hmm.
And Bitcoiners are out here like begging for like a few sats on the corner to just do something that they think is cool, you know? We need the help.
I know. And that for me was like the biggest like kind of like come to Jesus moment for me yesterday, because we had our open house and everything was going amazing there.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the very end, it was announced that they were going to build an accelerator. And I was like, yes, finally. Like, we have made enough noise. Others have made enough noise. Because I think Draper was doing one here in town, too. And,
mm-hmm.
like, they had made enough noise to where, like, cool. Like, the signal's getting out there that
mm-hmm.
Bitcoin developers need help. Like,
mm-hmm.
they need funding. Like, they need resources.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and for the longest time, me and Kyle felt like it was just the plebs that were doing a lot of the heavy lifting.
Right.
But it was cool to see, like, you know, Ross Stevens, like, say,
mm-hmm.
oh, no, I'm going to drop a ton of, like, fiat on it.
Yeah,
so
for
it's going to be cool.
Yeah.
Bullish on the future of Bitcoin if you're holding Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think so.
Obviously.
Yeah. I also think, like, it's like that. It's, like, all that infrastructure being built. It's, like, communities. Like, the
mm-hmm.
we interviewed Sid, who did the motorcycle
ride
across America.
I haven't met him yet. I've
yeah.
only seen him in meetups.
He's a cool dude. And, like, we talked a lot about the Bitcoin meetups that are coming
mm-hmm.
up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's so cool. Like, it's so, like, grassroots, you know?
Yeah, it totally
yeah.
is, dude. It's
So how long have you been in Austin? Like, it's I feel like Austin is really like the Bitcoin capital kind of right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's the
and
Mecca.
Like, so have people like moved here for Pleb Lab, or was it just Austin Bitcoiners that were sort of around here? Like, how did
yeah.
that kind of come about?
So, like, it's kind of interesting because we started Austin Bitcoin Club, and like we did that last year in like July or June, somewhere around there. And we were just trying to hang out with the rest of the Bitcoiners. Just because there was only one meetup in town at BitDevs, but
mm-hmm.
BitDevs is more like developer focused. It's
mm-hmm.
like really
and very
high.
Heavily technical.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
I run the SF Bitcoin Devs.
Oh, boss.
Meetup. Yeah, and it's like we're trying to make it more accessible. But yeah, it's very
100%.
Yeah.
We should have told our Uber driver about Pleb Lab instead of the
that's
awesome
right.
BitDevs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
either
we're orange pilling our Uber driver.
Yeah, either or. And like. Yeah, so, like, pretty much we did that, and then people wanted to start, like I said, hanging out, and then at that point, it was, actually, what was your original question again? How did we...
Yeah, like, just sort of, like, how did it come to be in Austin? Like, it just seems there's so much that's in Austin with Bitcoin, and I'm always curious, like, how much of that is intentional? Like, people are like, oh, this is where it's happening, I'm coming to Austin,
gotcha.
Or did it just sort of organically arise here from people that were already
so, like,
here?
Like, I used to be in the crypto space.
Oh,
okay.
Really?
Yeah, so, like, I learned
checkered past.
I learned a lot of, like, being in the crypto space because...
Wait, so then how did you get into the crypto space? What was your first, like...
Yeah,
I was a crap coiner. I was a poo-poo coiner.
What,
like,
was your love? For first love?
What do you mean, like...
Like, your first...
Oh, no, I got into
like
Bitcoin.
Trading? Or, like, what do you
no,
mean?
No, I got into Bitcoin in 2015, but I started a media company around crypto.
Okay.
And then I would
see.
Go to, like, Consensus in Brooklyn, and I would do all... I would interview, like, Joe Lubin and Charles Hoskins. Like, I was full crypto media guy. It was so... I'm so sad.
No, I don't know, but
it was kind of cool that I learned.
Yeah,
I learned
you,
the hard way.
Yeah.
And Gary Leland, who's running BitBlock Boom, he, like, used to always hit me up when I met him at the Texas Bitcoin Conference, and he was like, hey... you're really good at this crypto stuff. You should probably just focus on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what does this guy know? He's a boomer, you know?
Uh-huh.
but he used to always tell me, hey, I'm doing... When he had the idea for BitBlock Boom in 2018, he was like, I'm doing this BitBlock Boom conference. You should just come and hang out, like, whatever. And I'd be like, yeah. And then I think the next one I went to, because he offered me again. So I went, and then I went again. And then it was finally in the 2021... I was like, oh no, now I see where this is. Yeah, now I get it.
Yeah.
And it was at that point, I was like, yeah, I need to move. And I had slowly kind of that bear market really taught me, like, crypto doesn't work.
Yeah.
You really learn in the bear market.
Yeah. Which is, like, contrasted to Bitcoin. Like, we're in a bear market right now.
Mm-hmm.
This place is filled with people who are psyched about Bitcoin.
100%.
Building things that they're psyched about. The price doesn't even really come up, right? It's like it's like when the price is going up, we talk about it a lot. When the price is down, it's like we have other things to talk about than the price. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so what literally happened was over the course of those 3 years from knowing Gary, I got orange pilled. And then at that point, I started like, you know, I started in Bitcoin. I went to the Bitcoin conference, the one that Jack dropped the El Salvador news.
Uh-huh.
Got super inspired there
because
like, I had a media pass and everything.
Uh-huh.
And then at that point, I saw Kyle like just from afar.
Uh-huh.
And then like I came back with the intention of like starting Austin Bitcoin Club. And then I had to find the right person for it. So I found Kyle. And then I just happened to run into Keon in Miami at that time. He was building out this like Reddit thing. This is before Keon was actually Keon. It was just like a normal like...
A normie.
Bitcoin developer.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I have this idea for this thing. Like
before, like now he's this like Zen dude who sits on like a couch. His desk. He has like a desk that's like 6 inches off the ground.
He's on a dog grooming table.
Dog grooming table.
Makes sense.
And he has this rug that he sits on. I assume he just sits there levitating like about
sometimes,
2 inches off of the ground.
Sometimes.
Like just hacking on Stacker News.
Yeah. And like literally that's what happened. And then, but during that course of that time, Parker Lewis, I think he got hired at Unchained in like 2018 or something.
Mm.
And then it was at that time that, Jimmy was already here and I think Tour was here at some point.
Tour Demeester?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then I think, I don't want to dox everybody that lives here because they'll kill me. But like, I think Pierre has said publicly he's in Austin. There are some other people that were doing like Goldstein or that were doing this thing at UT.
Mm.
And then that's when like everything started kind of, they literally laid all the groundwork for us.
Yeah.
You had Trammell Ventures here. Calicut was doing a lot of stuff. So there was already groundwork that was already laid here.
Yeah.
And then when Parker got hired at Unchained, I think it was like 2018-ish. And that's when like Unchained shifted from Ethereum and Bitcoin to just Bitcoin.
Oh, I didn't know that Unchained used to do Ethereum.
100%. I had no idea. Wow.
Yeah, because I was in the crypto space,
right?
And then they're honest about it. Like, and then at that point,
we can't be ashamed of our
This is how you
learn. Listen, like the Bitcoin salvation. You know, Satoshi's good word. It's open to everybody.
Yeah, and this is how you learn. And then literally at that point, Parker started championing, and Parker's just a great motivator, and he started championing, started doing these bit devs. Justin Moon came.
Uh-huh.
He was like the first real pleb dev, like, you know, that started off his own like Moon University and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I remember hearing about these guys, but I remember like seeing, I remember thinking it was just like small. And then like literally it was like in like, the 2020, like once the collapse, once Sailor got in, I felt like everybody understood Bitcoin at that point.
Mm.
It was just like the full thing. And then that's when you really started seeing bit devs open up, and then it would be like 100, 200 people. But everybody wanted more. Like, we wanted more Bitcoin here, and there wasn't enough. And then we started off the Bitcoin Club. The rest is history.
Yeah.
But like, it was... So now, you can walk down the street, and you'll probably run into any Bitcoiner.
It's very cool. I feel a little FOMO being in the Bay Area about...
I mean, Bay Area Bitcoin is pretty...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
We have a cool scene. Like, one thing that's kind of unique about the Bay Area is that we have like, there's a bunch of different areas where meetups meet, but they're all organized under the same meetup group. So there's the SF Bitcoin meetup, there's the East Bay Bitcoin meetup, and then the Peninsula, which is south of SF, and then the South Bay, which is south of the Peninsula.
Are they all rivals, or are they all
the same?
And they're all run by the same meetup group. If you go to the meetup page, you can see all the events on all of them. And I go to the SF one and the East Bay one. And we'll all come to the different meetups, and you'll see people who go to like a bunch of different meetups.
Yeah. We started the Austin Bitcoin Club, and then we gave it to Michael this year, like in February, and we told him to run it. At first, he didn't even want it. And we're like, dude, you have ABC. This has over 1,000 members. We're giving it to you because me and Kyle can't do it anymore. We're doing Club Lab.
Yeah.
And finally, he took it over, and now he's running with it. But in the beginning, he was just like, no.
Yeah. It takes a second. Like, it's pretty nervous.
It's pretty nervous. But now he's excelling at it. He's brought it enough for way. And then me, Paul, and Sahil started the Austin Bitcoin Design Club. We do that every other month.
What do you guys do there?
Oh, it's really cool, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you really get, like, the back-end developers. Because we have mostly, like, back-end developers here.
Yeah.
And then, like, we have, like, very few front-end guys here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but we have, like, this whole... You'll see it at the comments, but we have this whole, like, kind of easel with this... You know those big Crayola pads that have, like, you can do...
Yeah.
So we'll have this like whole like little like it's almost like a studio thing where we'll set up the easels over there, and you'll literally go there and you'll start mapping this like whatever paper that you got of whatever app that we're trying to build and how the flow would work for it in the UI.
Cool.
And then Sahil will go over like the design updates, and like the new tools. And
kind
of like bit devs, but it's very more designer.
Right. It can be like I think it's hard like a lot of the time. people don't realize the value of designers, mm-hmm. and designers can sometimes be pushed out of open source projects or not really want to contribute mm-hmm. to them in the first place.
Yeah.
Because back-end devs sometimes don't understand how important good design and good UX is, and they kind of think that they can just do it themselves, and they kind of can't.
What was cool is, like, Buck, you know, he runs Austin BitDev, so I was in a group with Buck and, like, a few other people, and Buck's a big brain, right? So, like, he was showing us all this back-end and stuff, and we were, like, building an app, and then I was like, well, it should look like this, Buck. Like, you know, it should look, like, beautiful. And he's like, well, Carr, and he, like, started pointing out all the problems that he would have if it was built like that. So it was cool because you got to see, like, what a back-end guy sees from that, and then it was like that. That was the cool thing about the whole design club was like, oh, I understand your problems now.
Yeah.
And, like, you understand my problems now.
For sure.
Yeah, and that was cool.
Yeah.
It brought clarity to both sides.
Yeah. When you're designing a system, like, sometimes you'll have ideas about how you want it to look, but then those are actually just kind of, like, impossible. Like, the way that the back end works, if you did that, it'd be really inefficient or really slow or, like, just not feasible at all.
Yeah.
And so any good system is like this balance between what the back-end devs can kind of provide and what the good user experience is.
I feel like that's what you're spinning your wheels about with the Ordinals Block Explorer. It's like you have so much data to represent. Like, how do you make it actually digestible and, like, so that someone can go through it and, like, find the things that they're looking for, whatever that may be.
Yeah, and a lot of it is, like, listening to what users want and what users do. Like, you have to, you can put something out there, but then you have to see how people interact with it. And then you are like, okay, people have this problem, I need to fix this. Or people want this thing, I need to add this, you know?
Yeah, because so Casey just gave an Ordinals workshop here.
Yeah, thank you for doing that, by the way.
No, thank you for having me. ABSO. Always be shilling Ordinals.
Yeah, that's the slogan. But really, I mean, it is useful to, like, just show people. I think it was good that you just went through the Block Explorer for people, because I feel like that's, you know, to see how you imagine using it and then to hear, like, oh, it would be useful to have this. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay, right. So you can do this. Like, because it is just, I mean, it's a lot to wrap your head around. Mm-hmm. And, like, if you don't have, like, an intuitive sense for, like, what you're looking for.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
But it went well, I thought.
It went really well. I was really surprised.
I showed up 10 minutes before. Super was like, dude, nobody showed up. Nobody's here. And, like, you know, people were just a little late. You know, they came, like, you know, 12:10. So we waited and people showed up. And it was
like, I mean, it's noon after, like, a night out.
Yeah, and, like, then it's Bitblock. Boom.
Like, yeah. But honestly, I'll talk to, like, one person about Ordinals. I'll give a presentation to one person.
If I'm sure he talks to himself about
it. Or like it's a dog. It's
definitely fascinating. I feel like it... dude, it's really fascinating.
Well, Bitcoin needs
fun. You made it fun, though. It was a fun workshop.
It's like you start with the shitcoinery, and then you end up at Bitcoin, and then you end up back at Ordinals.
You end up at Ordinals at the end.
But I think it's, like, it's really something I thought about, is Bitcoin needs fun. Bitcoin needs art, and we need good art. We need art that isn't just like a big orange bee, you know?
Yeah.
We need art that doesn't reference Bitcoin itself.
Yeah.
And we need fun, and we need to be like, I think it's the wrong attitude to be like, you filthy, you know, altcoiners. Like, you know, you've got to be like, listen, hey, just come over here, check it out, see what we're doing. We're doing cool stuff. Like, you can do this stuff. It's fun.
Yeah.
You can build on it. Like,
yeah, it's definitely one of those things where, like, I feel like my journey, like, I definitely was that person that you're talking about at one time. And then, took me a long time to realize, like, no, they just don't have, they don't know, right?
Yeah, right. So
you gotta, like, build it out for them. Mm-hmm. My hope with doing Pleb Lab and these workshops is to get some Ethereum developers. When we were at Capital Factory, there was nothing but Ethereum developers.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just constantly come up to me, Kyle, and Keon, asking us all sorts of Bitcoin questions.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and they were fascinated by Lightning.
Mm.
But the reason a lot of them didn't move over to Lightning is because there wasn't any money. They couldn't create a token. Like,
right,
they were honest about trying to secure the bag first.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And, like, when you talk to an Ethereum entrepreneur, like, and they're literally telling you the only reason they're doing their project is because they can get so many tokens and they can sell them, like, and they're trying to secure a bag.
Well,
like, that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you know what happened to the Ethereum version of Lightning?
Wait, was there?
Yeah.
Wasn't it called, like, Raiden or
That's
something?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what happened is, like, Lightning was starting to be developed. It was early. I mean, it must have been, like, 2017 or something. And then some Ethereum devs were like, oh, we need to do Lightning on Ethereum. They created this thing called Raiden. And then, but it's because it's Ethereum and that's what they do over there, they added a token. There's a special Raiden token that you, like, need to like use the network, and they just had to. And then like, it's terrible. It's super unusable. You don't have to get a second token because you want to do something. Lightning is hard enough as it is. Imagine if you had a special Lightning token,
right?
And you need to manage your balance of Lightning tokens. Like, it's a mess.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those things where once you realize what you just said, that the reason a lot of these developers are going after that, but I think it's bullish seeing, like, you know, what Taro is doing, what NYDIG is doing. It's probably not the route that I would go, but I think let's try all the ideas and see what works.
Like, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I'm on board with trying new ideas all the time.
Yeah, for sure. What are you working on anything new these days? Something at PlebLab, or like, what are you trying to like improve at PlebLab and make better?
I think we're really focused just on the users, right? Like, I think that's where having Key on here like really helps us, is like having a developer a part of the founding group of PlebLab really helps us understand like what developers actually need. And a lot of them need peace and quiet. A lot of them need a lot of snacks and drinks and stuff like that. But a lot of them also need other brains around them to bounce off ideas.
For sure.
And the thing that I realized that a lot of them need help with is like the marketing and the branding.
Yeah.
And the things that kind of like what we specialize in here at PlebLab and like the events and stuff like that. Like, me and Kyle have always been able to like do events really well. And Kyle's a very likable guy. And so I think it's, we just were able to do that naturally because that just comes instinctual to us. And I, you know what I mean? And I think when you bring your talents to Bitcoin, you can really excel pretty easily if you lean on what makes you you, your uniqueness, you know? So like for you, like it's like numbers, it seems like, but also kind of like design. And so like, yeah, you're leaning into the...
Generalized arrangement.
Generalized arrangement, yeah, for
you're leaning into that, right? Casey Casey.
Yeah,
and like everybody knows you for that. So I think our focus is to try to bring out what that is for each developer that comes into PlebLab. Like what makes them
for
unique. And like help them any way we can to facilitate their growth in the space.
It's a good point about like what you said about like marketing and media kind of being, I've been talking to people this weekend about how that feels sort of especially lacking in Bitcoin in a way that like, you know, I mean, part of like why we want to do this podcast is just like kind of bringing the vibes to Bitcoin just making it a little bit more chill. But I agree with you. I think there's like, I don't know, a lot of people don't have that sort of marketing mindedness in Bitcoin. I think maybe it's just like hard money sort of perspective. People don't necessarily think like that. But that's an important part of it too, right? Is like the media and sort of all of that around it, like the events and the meetups are like an example of that in a way. Like,
and there's also going to be a lot of people who will never understand the technical side of Bitcoin. You know, and we want to reach those people too, you know, even if they can't understand the technical side or they're not interested, you know, we want to show them that there's like fun here, that there's a community here, that there's like interesting things that they want to be a part of, you know?
And I think the biggest thing that I hear, these days when it comes to like Lightning projects and people building in Lightning is there, a lot of them are building, but they're building in a way to where they're not fearful of like the Web 2.0 companies like the Facebooks or the Twitters or anything like that. But they're more like, it almost feels like they're climbing an uphill battle as opposed to like looking at it from like a different perspective. Like, I think Lightning really enables us to rethink how we look at a lot of these like social media websites or just projects in general that are being built on the internet. And like one of the things that we could really do is like really focus in on like the branding and the uniqueness of what makes Lightning Lightning, right? And so like what I'm kind of talking about is like, I feel like a lot of, I feel like there's a lot of really talented, like, people in Bitcoin. And I feel like that talent, in order, I feel like, and this, I think Carmen told me one time where he's like, in Bitcoin, it's so horizontal as far as, like, the talent. And, like, the great talent in Bitcoin usually finds its way to the top. Like, he says it, like, it happens naturally. Like, if you're talented in Bitcoin, you're just going to naturally rise to the top. Like, it's, that's what's one really cool thing about Bitcoin. And I think from what I look at whenever a project comes into PlebLab and we're tasked to help them, I always look at it like, okay, what has been done before? And, like, what can we do now that's, like, way different? And, like, one of the things that when we launched, like, Lightning Escrow, this...
What is Lightning Escrow?
Like, Lightning Escrow is trying to... super testnet invest in this thing called Lightning Escrow, mm-hmm. right? And like the way I understand it is that you can send escrow over the Lightning Network. Mm-hmm. And I think there's like...
So escrow being where you want to do a trade and one person puts up the funds and like kind of locks them. And then when the trade completes, you get your house, you know, or whatever.
Or whatever. I think there's like based on a hash. Like you have to look at the GitHub. I'm not that smart, but super... I remember when he had come up with the idea, we were like driving to like Buffalo Wild Wings or something. And he was like, I solved it. And I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, tell me, explain it to me. He explained it. But when we launched Lightning Escrow at a Plub Lab, we helped like Tristan over the course of like 2 weeks before mm-hmm. we were going to do this event at ABC where he was going to launch Lightning Escrow. Mm-hmm. And like we were all of us, I'm literally everybody in Plub Lab, like, and I don't want to dox those people, but they were all here like hearing his pitch and like helping him through it. And Tristan was a very great public speaker at that time, but mm-hmm. like we were helping him through it because he was like really young, uh-huh. but he was like really talented as well. Uh-huh. And so it was just like everybody came in there like to help him. Mm-hmm. But what we did at Plub Lab was like, we wanted to create an event around it. Like mm-hmm. we want to bring mm-hmm. back like what Jobs used to do, where like, you know, every time something got announced, yeah, it right was on. Like, boom.
Yeah, I
like
want that. I want that, but like, you know, but January 14th.
But Lightning should be that. You guys are some of the smartest people in the space. Like, you guys deserve a better, but you know what I mean? You deserve a better platform. And they're like Bitcoin gives us an opportunity to actually reinvent the old way of doing things.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like a lot of what I see in the Bitcoin space... A lot of Bitcoiners
are not good at self-promotion.
But it's that too, but I feel like a lot of what I see in the Bitcoin space is very like old school, you know, 20... It looks like the past. And like I feel like this is our chance to reinvent that. Mm, like we don't have to do it the same way they've been doing it in the fiat system.
For sure.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And that comes through like media, marketing, branding, all that's like reinvent it all. Mm-hmm, like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's kind of like, I don't know, I feel like the like Web3 people are good at what you're describing, where they're like, let's reimagine what social media could be. Let's reimagine blah, blah, blah. And I think like Bitcoiners have like, they sort of want mm-hmm. to distance themselves from that rhetoric, uh-huh. but there's something there, right? Like, I don't know, reimagining like how all of this could be, I think mm-hmm. is a crucial part of it as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think like there's an opportunity there to actually like, look at things a little bit differently. And like, if the next Facebook, let's just say hypothetically, is going to have to come from somebody who believes they can do the impossible. Right. Mm-hmm. And like, it's going to have to be really cool. It's going to have to be like, and use Lightning. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to have to do a lot of really cool things to surpass Facebook.
Right.
And like, it a lot of that's going to have to do with the marketing of it and the branding of it and mm-hmm. how people perceive it, but it's going to it's literally going to have to walk a very fine line. And that's right. what I think like Stacker News has done. That's what Fountain has done mm-hmm. is they really focused in like, how can I make this like really awesome, but have a little like style and branding to it. And like those guys got it.
Can you explain sort of like Lightning social media? Because I have experience with like, you know, Fountain, Stacker News, whatever, but I don't really understand like, what do you mean at like a base level?
I think it's just where the incentives in that site are giving something back to the users for the input that they're putting into it. I think Stacker News does that really well.
So like, instead of like an ad-based model of like running a website, is that what you mean?
100%. Like, so if you look at Stacker News, like you go there and you like vote on what you think is a better story, and then you can comment and you leave sats. And I think like Keon has kind of done that really, really well without like losing this like Bitcoiner edge to it, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's like stayed in its pocket, and mm-hmm. he's just like doubling down on how do I please more users? Because at the end of the day, it's literally just a network effect, mm-hmm. right? You just have to get back to like the re-education of like, okay, the users want this. Okay, do they really need this? And like, it's just subtracting. It's more just like removing mm-hmm. and refining over time. Right. But it's also adding too, mm-hmm. because they want certain things. And it's just like keeping them in there and making them happy over the course of like, mm-hmm. you know, the course of the site. And I think Lightning can do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we're kind of better at it as Bitcoiners and developers, is like a lot of us understand what that really could look like. So that's how I see it. Like I see it as like refining, focus on the users, and actually like utilize something that something novel that Lightning can bring to it. It doesn't mean you just stack it on, Like, that's too weak. Like, that's low-hanging fruit. Like, right. That's not going to be successful.
Right.
It needs to be something that, like, is new, novel, unique, style, brand. It's a lot of things to hit, mm-hmm. but it's there once you start breaking, once you, like, really start looking at where you want to go and then, like, breaking it backwards. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, like, deconstructing it.
Yeah, I mean, we did a, like, open source ad read.
Yeah, we've been thinking about how to monetize the podcast. Uh-huh. And I was like, well, we've been talking about like ads, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, wouldn't it be cool if we could get paid to read ads for open source projects? So I posted a poll to Stacker News and I was like, hey, here's like 5 or 6 different projects and like vote on which ones you want us to read an ad for. So we did a 1 minute ad read for Sparrow Bitcoin Wallet. That was the winner of the poll.
Plus.
For like 16 stats.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You should totally keep doing that.
Yeah, no, I like it. It was fun. It's good too, because like, I mean, you pre-select, right? Like Casey decided like these are the things that I would be willing to talk about. Yeah. And then
that's
you know,
such a great idea.
And that was because that was made possible by Stacker News, the Stacker News like poll feature, right? And I think that's a really interesting way. Like there's all these ways that you can like crowdsource things. You know, like I don't know. I hope that we can find a way to make money that like is in line with what users want and what users
are. Y'all using like Podcasting 2.0 on here?
Yeah. We're on Fountain.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we met a little bit. Like,
shoot the boost.
Oh yeah, shoot the boost.
Yeah, boost us.
Come in, boost us. Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah. We get like random comments and boosts and stuff, and it's cool. Like it's like we're not even monetized on YouTube. You have to get pretty big
before
you even get monetized on YouTube. And so it's cool that like there's a way that you just get monetized from day one with like a sat or two. You know, like the barrier to entry is very low.
Yeah. That's cool.
And Aaron gets really excited whenever she sees, because Aaron's done a lot of stuff on like TikTok and YouTube.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, where like, but the monetization of those platforms are so bad. You get like a billionth of a penny for every view.
And you have to cross, at least for YouTube and for TikTok actually, you have to cross a threshold of popularity before they'll even offer you the crumbs. Like you can't just like post. They have to be like, okay, you have to have a certain number of followers and a certain amount of watch time, and then they'll start paying you for your ads.
Yeah.
And so, like, to just be on Fountain for, like, a week and just see.
So the first time, like, we saw the Fountain app, I opened it up and we made, like, you know, 500 sats. And I was like, oh, yeah, we made, like, 500 sats. And Aaron's like, how much is that? And I'm like, I don't know, like a nickel or something. And she's like, that's incredible. Like,
I know, it's incredible, though, like, when you think of, like, how many sats it is, right?
Yeah.
No, it's a totally different, because, like, I do more, like, content creation, like, in the traditional media, and then, like...
She has a whole, like, cottage core,
like, I'm, like, prepper. A cottage core prepper, homesteader.
How to, like, grow things. She has chickens in her backyard. She's got some urban chickens.
Nice. Yeah, so I live a double life online. I have that side, and then I have the Bitcoin side of things. But it's interesting to kind of see, like, like, the more... I guess it's not even traditional, because social media is not even the traditional media model, but like just kind of seeing like the podcasting 2.0 side of things, it's so cool, and there's so much potential there.
Absolutely. And you guys do something cool. So the other thing you do, Carr, you're the producer for
Marty Bent
for Marty Bent's podcast, Tales from the Crypt.
One
of my favorite podcasts. I've been listening to it for years and years.
Marty's
and
awesome.
And years. And you guys do a split on the podcast where you
some really nice sats. Let me pull them up.
Exactly. Wait. Can I see the live streaming sats coming in from?
Yeah, let me pull up my Zeus.
This is
shout out Zeus. Shout out Evan. I saw him in Nashville. It was really cool.
Finally, this is what we are aspiring for.
Goals,
This is not a lot. I only get 15% Odell, I think, something like that. So this will shoot over like the TFTC stuff, and then I got to jump over to Fountain for the other ones. But like if you look right now, it's just like one sat every second. Or
yeah, that's
every
amazing.
15 seconds.
So this is Zeus. So this is a
this connects to my node at home.
It's sort of like a lightning control.
So like you'll see here, and I don't know if Zeus goes that far back. Five sats.
Yeah, these are all like today.
Wow.
Yeah, just like streaming in.
That's
from
so
yours.
Funny.
It's not even my work. It's all Marty and Odell. And I'll show you like in Fountain. Like if you go to the wall, you go just like from like 7 days ago. We just go to the newest RHR that we just posted. Like that's all the ones that have come in. Just from the past 7 days. And like we do Stacker News Live, me and Keon, and like even this is like picking up too. So like you look at Stacker News Live, 7 days, 8,000 sats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like I'm playing the long game on all this stuff.
Yeah,
it's just like,
yeah,
what is that going to look like?
It's amazing. I mean, it's not just like, it's not just like the long game. You don't just have to believe in Bitcoin and that it's going to go up. It's like, this is so much better and so much easier than the traditional model with like 100%. Gatekeeper after gatekeeper. Like, first the platform is gatekeeping you, and then the payment company is gatekeeping you, and then your bank is gatekeeping you, right? Like everything. The idea that you can just put podcasts out there and stream sats onto your phone, like, that is just better than the traditional model. Like,
this is
way
where,
better.
This is where I really think, like, it's kind of funny we're talking about podcasting, because, like, that's what I started with, was a media company, Thriller X Recordings. And then, like, that's how, like, Marty found me and all this stuff. But, like, that's why I have, like, Thriller Bitcoin. But for me, the way I see it is, like, the more podcasts that you can capture as a production company, you could literally get to a point, and maybe I see this kind of, and maybe somebody will go out there and do it. You probably should. Start a production company. Start helping all these Bitcoiners like Casey and that, like, who are developers but want to start a podcast, and like do it for free, but like keep a portion of the sats.
Right. Yeah.
And then over the course of time, like, if you capture enough podcasts and that's all you're doing, like, you're literally going to have like this big war chest of sats.
Right. Yeah.
Because like in the next bull run, you're going to be set, and then you'll get your name out there for,
for sure,
for all this proof of work marketing that you're doing. And it's just like,
And producers, like, I mean, we don't have a producer. Aaron's,
you're the
producer.
We do have a producer.
What I mean is, like, we do everything that a producer does, we do, mostly Aaron does. And it's like, it's a lot of work. And people don't appreciate the work that a producer puts into a podcast. Like, the organizing, the scheduling, the uploading, the everything, the making sure that everything's working. Like, it's really like a big deal to have a good producer.
I think so.
I've been telling people I have to hear Casey's voice every day, because I record with him, I hang out with him, and I like edit everything and post everything.
Well, you guys are best friends, so that's
we're Bitcoin BFFs.
That's awesome. That's cool. Yeah, I get to do a pod with Marty, and that's a lot of fun, because it's just like straight up like learning
all sorts of
things. Like, Marty Bent's a...
Marty's hilarious, and I enjoy
it. On top of that, he's funny as hell.
Yeah,
like,
he's funny, yeah.
But it's like...
And he's also, like, I enjoy the Marty Jones, you know, just, like, going off the rails, you know?
I love it so
Marty
much.
Jones is very
so
much
good.
These, like, CIA, like, bug people, right? They are the bug people. They're also going to make us eat the bugs with their ESG narratives. Wake up, people. Do we even live in a free country?
It's so funny, too.
And I'm here for it.
I could see, like, Marty's probably not listening to this, but, like, I could see, like, this little, like, twitch that he has. And then I go, oh, crap, Marty Jones coming up. And he'll be like, stop eating the bugs, or he'll say something like, I'm just like, it's so hilarious.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
Marty Bent is so fun.
He's an old school. I think maybe the first Bitcoin podcast I ever listened to was Let's Talk Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That was way back in the day. And then I think
so good,
Marty is like the second oldest podcast, and definitely the oldest one that I still listen to.
Yeah, it's so good. And then there's, like, Odell, too. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, Odell, like, I've already worked with them long enough where I can see, like, where the conversation's going to go at this point.
Yeah.
Like,
their dynamic is hilarious.
Like, Odell.
The Odell-Marty dynamic is so
it's so
funny.
Good. Yeah. But, like, I can see, like, the wheels churning, like, with Odell when he's, like, thinking. So, like, I'm like, oh, there was something that somebody said. Oh, Odell's churning it right now, and it said he's going to have a great comeback. And then, like, 10 seconds later, boom, it goes. And it's like, oh, there it goes. That's what he was, like, thinking this whole time.
Yeah.
It's a blast working with those guys. I've learned so much. Just about media, how the industry works, like, everything. Consistency.
I really appreciate work ethic.
It's incredible the amount of... I say this all the time. There's absolutely no way Carr would be Carr without those two guys. Like, and especially Marty, like, helping me... every single day understand things. It's like, this is impossible. Like, the education
is
crazy.
You know what? I think it's really fun. I think Bitcoin is really interesting and really fun. The concept's really fun. And that's why I really enjoy explaining it to people. Like, it because I think those concepts are fun. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the truth for a lot of Bitcoiners. It's fun to learn things. And then it's also fun to explain those fun things to other people, you know?
Yeah.
It's
a lot of fun.
And also, people are really grateful. If you teach somebody something, they just love you forever, you know? And so it feels really good to teach people things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know. And now we also do a podcast with Keon. And that's a blast. We What's do Stacker News Live. And that's a lot of blast.
Stacker News is going to pop off.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Big time. Big time. I think all these social media sites like...
Maybe.
Yeah. No, like, I mean, it's gonna pop off. Like, the thing is one thing that I commented this on Stacker News, but when you have something that you don't like on a social media site, like Reddit, let's say, either like spam or people like up-clicking or they're upvoting their own posts or kind of using it as an advertising platform, they don't have a lot of really good options. Like they can try to ban users. They can try to like make it hard to do what this bad thing that people are doing, this bad behavior. They can give you a limit or something. Stacker News can just charge users a little bit more. They're like, oh, like, yeah, like users are doing this like kind of annoying thing. It like kind of whatever, we'll just put a price on it.
Right.
You know? And so like, let's say somebody's doing something annoying that like in the aggregate, each time somebody does it, it costs Stacker News 10 sats.
Yeah.
They can just price it at 15 sats.
Yeah.
And then it's, they're making money, right? Like Stacker News doesn't even need a separate advertising feature. You just post and boost your shit, and then that's how you advertise on Stacker News. Yeah.
It's crazy to think that it could probably be the most profitable media company in the entire world at some point. Just because if you think about, if you like play it out, like just like the game theory part of it, like if it captures everything, then at that point it's like it's holding sats. Mm-hmm. But it could also become like the biggest, like, how do you go and try to So it's. It could go either way. Keon always says all the time, it could go really, really well or like really, really bad.
For sure.
But it's kind of binary like that, I think. It's kind of cool.
I actually think Stacker News might not be binary. I think there's another world where it is very, very successful in a sort of smaller niche. And it's totally enough to support.
Interesting.
And it just lives forever and it has like hardcore people and it can support, you know, 10 to 100 people working on it. Really well. It never gets insanely big, but again, like with a Bitcoin business, if you're making sats,
you should be
and you don't have to have the startup like, oh, I have to be a billionaire in IPO. You can make a really great living on a smaller scale because you're bringing in money and you're not relying on that crazy growth to make money.
Absolutely. That's fascinating. Yeah.
And think about how many rare ordinals they might have.
Yeah, I was talking to Keon about rare ordinal strats for Stacker News.
What'd he say?
Well, we were kind of talking about it together, and the thing we kind of came up with is like, well, so Stacker News is on the Lightning Network.
Yeah.
And if it's a sat sync on the Lightning Network, people were going to want to open channels with Stacker News. So when somebody opens a channel to Stacker News, what Keon can do is he can look at the UTXO that they've made the channel with, and see if there are any rare ordinals in that UTXO, and then move and then rebalance from another channel to move all the sats onto his side.
Okay.
And then close that channel and strip out the rare ordinals. Oh, so anytime somebody opens a channel, they're putting up sats in that channel. There might be rare ordinals. Keon can like take those rare ordinals.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Ordinal strats. There are a lot of ordinal, like rare, like you can deposit money onto an exchange and then withdraw it, and you'll get different ordinals than the ones you deposited. So you can just cycle money through an exchange, the same like one Bitcoin, and each time you withdraw, you filter out the rare sats, the one or two rare sats, and keep going, right? You can provide liquidity to CoinJoin rounds. You can put in a Bitcoin into a CoinJoin round. You'll get a different Bitcoin out with different ordinals and strip out those rare ordinals.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot of...
Do you do this? Or do
no,
you just...
no. And I,
maybe you should.
No, I can't. Because one part of Bitcoin culture is you don't launch projects where the developer has a special advantage. That's kind of like not... I think it's okay. I think it'd be okay if I did this, but it's kind of something that you kind of shouldn't do. And
can you give me an example of that, Casey?
Yeah, like launching a token. We have token with a massive pre-mine. The developer makes a project and they're like, oh yeah, I have a massive pre-mine. So that's why everything for ordinals is open source. The wallet is open source. And I want to get it to the point where anybody can start executing these strats.
Yeah.
And then I can be like, okay guys, like I put this out here and the wallet's out there and like here's some ideas and now I'm going to start hunting some rare ordinals and you have as good a chance as I do. And I think that's what makes things acceptable to Bitcoiners.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got it all planned out. Huh?
Got it all planned out.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of reminds me, like, I think I said it today, but, like, I feel like it's, like, a platform of some sort that you can then make these little small little projects out of, like,
for sure.
Ordinal's idea. Like, and I remember telling you this on the pod, like, I don't know, there'll be somebody that comes to you that will have this, like, grandiose
galaxy brain.
But maybe it's a creative brain that has this like galaxy idea, mm-hmm. like, where it's just like, and then it'll just make it, and you'll be like, man, that was so obvious.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
We just, like, missed
yeah.
it. And I feel like that.
I think Ordinals is that kind of idea.
I think it is. Like, I feel like I can almost, like, pinpoint something, but it's just like, I think the Pokemon's just too low hanging fruit. But I think there's uh-huh. something else there, and I don't know what it is.
When
but as soon as I figure it out, I'll let you know.
When you get a grand
yeah.
vision,
yeah.
someday.
It usually happens in the shower, like, for sure, the water and stuff. But
I wanna respect your time. It's 1:07.
Yeah.
First, I have a fun fact.
Oh, boss! Yes, I love fun facts.
So your name is Carr.
Yeah.
My name is Casey Alexander Rodemore. My initials are Carr.
This makes sense.
Yeah,
you're gonna be fighting over the Carr ordinal.
No,
so my initials are CAG.
CAG, okay. Yeah. Nice. We need to find somebody whose nickname is CAG. We need a chain. Like Casey Alexander Rodemore, Carr CAG, and then somebody whose nickname is CAG.
That's
and
funny.
Then, yeah.
That's an awesome fun fact.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for talking to us.
Yeah.
And thanks for the Pleb Lab. Thank you for the Pleb Lab.
Yeah.
No, it was a group effort. Like, everybody helped out. Kyle, Keon, there's all these plebs, like Logan, Topher, like Austin, Jana, like
uh-huh.
we go to, and then like Nifty, like Stack,
yeah,
like
for
all,
sure,
all
yeah.
there we had Justin, like Carmen, like we can go down the list, like
mm-hmm.
all these Austinites helped us
uh-huh. yeah.
to get where we're at today. It wasn't just like three guys. No, it was a lot of people. Michael Atwood,
awesome.
John, too many people to name.
Do you have any ads or
yeah,
websites
yeah.
or anything
you want
to show?
Yeah, you want to show?
Yeah. Check out ThrillerBitcoin.com.
ThrillerBitcoin.com.
Yeah,
podcast.
I try to write about developers that are creating cool things like the Dolly Telegram bot. I don't
uh-huh.
know if you saw that. That's
mm-hmm.
really cool. So I try to give like publicity to developers that are coming
Pleblicity.
Up. Publicity to developers that are coming up, just because I feel like, you know, and I love Bitcoin Magazine, but they're not going to write about these guys.
Uh-huh.
Like, they don't have the time.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, this is where I can help out. So
awesome.
Check out ThrillerBitcoin.com and then also check out GFTC.io.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
yeah,
an amazing thing. And then if you're interested in working at Pleb Lab or even doing a startup at Pleb Lab, go to PlebLab.com and sign up.
Awesome.
Hell yeah.
Awesome.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Signing off.
Till next time.
Yeah.
Bye.